evening. Welcome to the April 15th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I wonder if folks would please stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance with me. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please silence any cell phones or other electronic devices. Remember that our exits, in case of a fire, are to my left in the back of the room, to the front of the room, rather, and to my right in the back of the room. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis will be a few minutes late. Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne has asked to be excused. Mr. Lane?
Here.
12 members present.
Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I would just mention that we did have a petition from folks about Perry City Road that I passed on to members. I think we're going to move right ahead. And at the beginning, I would like to call Dan Klein up to talk about a distinguished youth.
Thank you, Mike. I'm pleased to present Maya Pat with the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award, and I'm wondering if Maya and her entourage would come up now. So Maya was active in many extracurricular activities at Ithaca High School, including vice president of the Model United Nations Club, photo editor of the school newspaper, and a member of the Garden Club. Maya has worked as a counselor for the Danby Youth Program and as a volunteer mentor for the Earth Arts Program. Maya has been a member of the board of directors of the Danby Community Council. And as far as I know, she is the youngest person ever to hold that position. She's currently 19 years old. She's going to TC3, majoring in liberal arts. She's planning a nonpartisan Get Out the Vote campaign for students this fall. She's in the Honor Society and on the Dean's List. And I would like to, are you going to say something? I'd like to introduce her father, David, and he wanted to say a few words.
Hi, I want to thank Dan and all of the members of the legislature for giving Maya this very special honor. I guess it's the case that all parents think their children are special, but when you suddenly realize that the rest of the world also thinks there's something special about your daughter, you realize that they're really growing up. So thank you for giving me that that realization in such a wonderful way. I think Maya especially deserves this because she loves this community. She loves Ithaca so much that we couldn't even get her to leave when it was time to go to college. And she decided to spend a couple of years at TC3. So once again, thank you all very much.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Dan. I've lived in Ithaca and Danby for my entire life, so I can honestly say that it's the best place anyone could wish to grow up in. So thank you to my parents for supporting my political activism, and thank you to my sister for allowing me to stop playing with her on some evenings to go to meetings. I know that was hard for her. And thank you to the legislature. You guys do so much to support this community and improve it, and I really appreciate that because I love this community very, very much. So thank you. I hope someday that I can serve this community on the same level that you do. And I know that it's hard to find political activists that are this young today, which is a shame, but I'm really proud to be one of them. So thank you very much.
Maya, don't go away. So again, it is my honor to present you with this plaque that goes with it. If you want to pose for some photos, it's the traditional one hand over, kind of grabbing with the other hand, smiling. Good, perfect, perfect. Keep smiling.
You're used to the photo ops.
All right, got another photo op. Okay, keep smiling.
There you go.
All right, thank you. And Maya's also a couple of goodies here. So you can check them out later.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.
Very nice, Dan. Great recipient, great public service. We certainly appreciate your bringing her forward to us. Now's the time we have open to allow folks in the public to speak to us. I will remind folks that there are rules for speaking under privilege of the floor, and it is a privilege. There is a 3-minute time limit, and Kathy Covert to my left will be keeping time and will signal when there's a minute left and when time is up. We will only recognize folks who have signed a blue card, and on that card, our rules are printed, which say, I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. I have one blue card at this point. Are there any others that could be handed up? Please hand it up. We'll be glad to have it.
Sherry.
I have tonight Sherry Borthius.
Yeah. Sherry Cortice.
Borthius.
That's okay. Don't worry, Cortice. It's a hard one. I know. I don't know what the status is of the jail expansion vote, but I did want to speak out and ask that you guys, like, wait maybe a year, if you can, the moratorium, because I still... the community, I think, still needs to know who's there, why they're there, how long they're there. And I think even if we do the expansion with the more women being incarcerated, then they'll have to be boarded out. So I don't know that that issue's been solved. And then the cost of the expansion is also an issue because it's increased. And then the outdoor building that they say is going to be the indoor program, I don't think that will work because I've looked at the new plans that they presented yesterday, and those plans, even then, that building's still going to block the sun, and they won't be able to see out their windows, the cells that do have windows. Let's see. And then the bond issue. I know that it's in the bond issue right now for, what, $850,000, I believe, is what it's in the $9.3 million bond issue from 2013. But the new bond issue that I just read online has a $910,000 in parentheses and then $900,000. So, and that's another question. So these are just some questions I'm throwing out there as you guys discuss the expansion of the jail. And I would like to say that I think that humanity should be going in the other direction, and that's taking care of people and trying to figure out what's wrong and what happened to, you know, cause what's going on. Because we know it's disparity all throughout the country right now. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate it, and I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your comments. We have a former member of the Tompkins County Board of Representatives, Don Lifton. Don, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Thank you for your public service.
Don, we need to have you use one of the microphones, if you would, please.
Certainly. My remarks today are indeed informed by my past service on this august body, as well as my service as a former member of the Cornell Board of Trustees. I'm sure that all of you were following with interest the dialogue between the largest town supervisor, the mayor of our county seat, and President Scorton about the appropriate level of the Cornell University contribution to our community. And I imagine that many of you shared my dismay that those discussions never really came to any community satisfactory outcome. We need to learn from this, moving forward. Moving forward, this community needs a different kind of Cornell University president, a university president that more appreciates the symbiotic nature between the campus and our local folks who together combine to make each of us greater, greater. And so it seems to me that in our lessons, looking forward, we have a stake. We, the community, led by you, have a stake in the choice of the next Cornell University president. After all, ladies and gentlemen, we, your constituents, help pay that president's salary. Now, I know that your chair of the budget committee, Mr. Dennis, will point out that there's no allocation line, Cornell University president. But it's hidden between those lines. It's hidden in the revenue section. Because what will happen is that Cornell University, in order to recruit its next president, will do what it has historically done. It will offer a fringe benefit package to that winner, which will include free housing. And so, if we look at the example of the outgoing president, when President Skorton arrived, he had his administration declare his residence, officially characterized by your professionals in our assessment office, as a mansion. He had that building declared tax exempt for educational purposes, including all seven bedrooms in the 8,700 square foot. Let us pause for a moment and imagine what kind of education is going on behind the curtain bedroom walls, the bedroom videos, the bedroom slides, the bedroom PowerPoints, the bedroom diagrams on the chalkboard. Had this particular year, had the president opted not to distort in my mind and use as a loophole to claim that tax exemption, Cornell University would have paid over $50,000 arrayed over the county, the town, the village, and the school district for just one year. Instead, that tax avoidance was used to pay approximately 6% of his salary. And so we need a new and different kind of president. I would think, Mr. Chair, that there's room, since we're paying part of that salary, that there's room on the 19-person search committee for one of your colleagues to be a member of that search so that we can learn the predispositions of the finalists who seek this position. Yeah. And I urge you all to do that and seek that membership on that committee. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. We now come to a privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Do we have any municipal officials that might like to speak to us tonight? I see one in the audience. Did you want to speak? Thank you, Jay. Privilege of the floor for legislators. Will.
Thank you. I would bring to your attention an article that is in today's issue of the New York Times about the rising cost of rents in our country. Historically, it was generally considered that it was about a goal to have rental costs be no more than 30% of one's income. That was sort of generally a rule of thumb. But over the past decades, that has, in communities all across the country, been rising. And they include a chart of some of the more expensive cities where this has occurred, and we have the dubious distinction of being included on that. The cost of rents, according to our chart, in Ithaca, are up 38.6% of median income, and that's risen from 34 back in 2000. I bring this to your attention both because I think it's important for us to understand that this is a phenomenon we're seeing not just here but everywhere. But also it really underscores what is a real need to be addressed, I think, by our community of better and cheaper, more affordable rents. And as we all know, we undertook one such project, a rent to eventually own project that we hope comes to fruition up near the hospital. And I think we should feel good that we have done, in our small way, something to counteract this this unfortunate trend. Thank you.
Anyone else? Carol Chalk, then Martha Robertson.
So I'll just preliminarily piggyback off Will. Those who didn't have the opportunity to hear the presentation about housing trends that came to peak and that Paul Mazzarella did downtown at several of their committees, he happens to be giving a similar presentation to the Bryant Park Civic Association. One of their regular meetings is May 1st, which is before we meet again, from 7 to 8:30 at Bell Sherman School, a presentation called Taking Stock, Local Neighborhood Housing in the Past, Present, and Future. It was a very interesting presentation about the trends and are we meeting the need, and it was good, and at some point it may make sense to have him come do it here, but enough if you go hear it there, we won't need to do that. I raised my hand actually to talk for a minute about the weather. I know you're going to groan. If you believe, as I do, that we all need to take responsibility for ensuring that our grandchildren and their children don't have weather that makes today look like a picnic, there's an opportunity even in the next few days to help do our bit to do something about it, and that is to comment on the New York State Energy Plan, the draft energy plan. We're in the last week of the comment period on that draft. April 30th is the deadline. We weighed in as a legislature. The main points, if you want to comment on it, you go to, I think it's energyplan.ny.gov. If you just search for Energy Plan 2014 New York State, you will get to the website. And you can comment right online, and you can put in more substantive comments, but you can put in the comments in even greater summary that we came to here, which is, number one, that we applaud New York State's goal to rein in emissions, that it needs to be done, and finally they've put that in writing in a way that will be an actual goal. And number two, that they did not then go on to create a plan, other than observations about where our energy will go in the next 20, 30 years. All they did was make an observation. They didn't do what they ask us to do whenever they're looking to us to act and to spend money or to apply for grants. They ask us to define how are you going to get there, how are you going to get to that goal, and we have to spell out the steps. So whatever you think those steps should be, whether we agree with the steps they then propose in the final draft or not, we can argue then, but at least they should create some kind of action steps to take. So I urge people, with your titles, defining whatever you do in the community, to go online. Were you looking up the website for me? Energyplan.ny.gov will get you there. And just at least tell New York State that we'd really like to see them create a true plan. Thanks.
Martha.
Thank you. And thanks, Don, for bringing this topic to us. It may not be polite, but, you know, I guess I'll mention anyway. And it connects to what Will and Carol's point about housing, is that early in his tenure here, Governor Scorton, President Scorton made a lot of friends and created a great deal of excitement by announcing a $20 million commitment over 10 years that the university would put towards housing in the community and transportation. 10 years is almost up. The transportation part of that funding has been, you know, allocated kind of as the projects have gotten built, and that's we don't, you know, because the projects have been delayed, the spending has been delayed too, and there's not a lot of complaint about that. The housing side, however, the $10 million ended up being whittled down to $1.2 million, which has been very well used through the housing fund, a three-part partnership between among the city, county, and Cornell. Been very, very important in building, in facilitating the construction through the private sector of affordable housing in the county. But, and Carol, I would love to have Paul come do his presentation here. I think we all need to see it. It should be on camera. We should do it here. It's worth the time because this is a major policy goal and requirement of our legislature to know what's going on with the housing. So the housing fund has been successful, $1.2 million over the last 5 years from Cornell, but it's barely a drop in the bucket. It's certainly not $10 million. And we consciously did not participate in the request that the city and town made to Cornell for undesignated property, you know, property tax relief. We didn't go along with that request. We felt our greatest, highest priority would be fulfillment of the $10 million promise. I won't say any more, but I will accept to say that we're coming to the end of the first 6 years of the housing fund, of the allocation that the three partners have committed to. I know that I understand the city is struggling to figure out where they can find their share. We have some concerns about where we'll be able to find our share. But I would think Cornell could find its share. I would think when you go up there on campus and you see the construction that is going on and you see, you know what the investment has been in the tech campus in the city, it is hard. It is hard to hear about the median rents in apartments in this county, and it is hard to hear about people who can't find anything they can afford, and therefore they have to drive a half hour or 45 minutes, and they're supposed to feel lucky that they got a job at Cornell. So it is a symbiotic relationship. But, you know, just from the self-interest side of Cornell's concern for replacing its baby boomer staff and faculty, who like my husband who's thinking about retiring, but we're not thinking about moving, where are the replacement faculty and staff going to live? So I don't know whether there's any remote hope of having a voice at the table on selection of the president, the next president of the university. But, Mr. Chair, I would like to request that between you and Joe, figure out how we might make that request and I suppose with the consent of the rest of us. I think that's a damn good thing to ask for. Thank you.
Does anyone know if a community member has been appointed to those search committees in the past? Don's shaking his head no. Maybe you just don't know. So that might be interesting to find out. Peter?
I was on one such committee. There was no community member on it.
Thank you, Martha. We can take a look at that. Jim Dennis, then Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you, Michael. Apologize for being late. It was snowing in Trumansburg. It is April 15th. A couple of comments about what I've heard as I was walking in. Number one, I didn't go to Cornell. I don't work for them. I never have. My wife never worked for them. I had a brother who worked for them 40 years ago. In 2008, whatever promise that was made by Cornell and others all went away after the economic earthquake that happened nationwide. If they were promising $10 million, basically that money went away. The construction on campus, unless I'm completely wrong, it, all of it you see is paid for by money they have in their pocket. They are not bonding projects anymore as they used to. They get someone hands them some money, and they put the project out to bid, and it gets built. I don't believe they bonded Bill Gates' project or any of the other things that you see. All of you know who've lived here, Martha especially and others, there's less than a 2% housing vacancy rate in the county. There's a need for all kinds of housing, high-end, low and mod, and the way that happens is developers with money and the community gets together and tries to figure out how that's going to work. But if you're a developer and you move into Tompkins County and you want to do something, you have to be a high jumper to jump through all the hoops that towns put in your way, especially the town of Ithaca and other places, to try to do development. And believe me, all of you who've lived here long enough realize that. Go, you know, get some money, go try to put a project up somewhere, and it's going to take forever for you to do it. The only way things happen, government helps in certain ways, IDAs. The city of Ithaca basically is an intense plan, an intensity plan for downtown, and they've made that work, and they had to change a lot of things to encourage people to spend their money. You know, you need housing in Tompkins County, you have to open your arms up and allow people to come in and then regulate what happened. But most developers, even though all of you will say, oh, there's a lot of things going on, yeah, there are, but they've been through the mill to get to where they are, and they're intense about what they do. Other kind of minor league players, they're going to go away because they're not going to be able to stand up to the heat in the county. So before we say, oh, we're out of housing and somebody should do something, you have to look at what makes for housing. It makes money, it makes risk-taking, and you have to have laws that builders can build on.
Thank you, Jim. Kathy?
It's going to be tough to segue on that. I started out being stimulated by what Mr. Lifton said, because that assertion that that $50,000 in, let's just say, averred taxes could have been used by the county or other entities brings me to think about, you know, that stats class where I found out the difference between average and median. And what you said is it's a median income that is 38%, did you say, there, about what rents cost. So I'm thinking to myself, how many of the Cornell presidents made median income? Well, probably not any in the last several generations. How many people that live in the city of Ithaca proper make four times the median income? I think that there's a disparity in wages that's part of the problem. And as much as I don't want to be seen as an apologist for Cornell, I have worked for them for 25 years, I think that there's more to the problem, and I won't say that hoops are necessarily a bad thing. I think that Ithaca, town, and city tries to preserve a sense of place, and to do that may drive some developers mad, but for other developers, it makes them want to come here because we've got what they want. We've got a pretty well-educated community, a lot of people that are going to come back to visit, a lot of people who want to come back to live here in retirement, and a lot of beautiful nature characteristics so far, hoping that fracking doesn't devastate Finger Lakes. Anyway, what I'm getting at is I think that we could squeeze a lot more money out of Cornell, and I'm all for it. I volunteer to be on that committee. But I also think we need to look at our own selves. We need to think about living wage. We need to think about raising the minimum wage in Tompkins County and in New York State. I've heard talk about it all over the country, and I'm really interested in that. And I bet you there's a number of us on this legislature that would be interested in that. You may say they're not related. I think we could talk about that a while, because I think raising the median income in Tompkins County could be accomplished a lot more quickly if we thought about raising the minimum wage here.
Anyone else? Well, let's move on. For my report, I would simply mention that my immediate predecessor here, Martha Robertson, has been there from the beginning at the Regional Economic Development Board. And I had the privilege of attending a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and Martha was there. I was pleased she was there. To learn a little bit about that board, I have to admit to being a newbie at it, and we'll be looking to learn more, and I hope Martha stays involved with it. We'd like to have her do that. It's important that we have a presence there. It is a large board of about 25, 35 people. I think we were sitting around a very large table down at Binghamton University. We learned a couple of grants that were issued for telemedicine and mobile health research, not to Tompkins County, but to some of the other counties that had projects. And those were the only two grant applications that were there. We learned also that in the future there will be another initiative trying to give grants to companies that can demonstrate their wherewithal with exporting products from New York State. So this is something that's it's important. They're going to compress the grant cycle. Those cynical among us might think it has something to do with an election year that they might be doing that for, but stay tuned. There still are several grants out there. I think that the nicest thing that happened, we had a presentation from a recipient from Tompkins County, and that's from the I'm sorry, Martha, you may know her name.
Yeah, I am.
From the Piggery in Trumansburg that has a grant to develop its business. And is doing very well. It was a short presentation, but there was a lot of meat in it. I'm sorry for the pun. including how the Piggery is expanding its markets in New York City to be able to provide products for areas outside of our local community. So we pat them on the back and congratulate them for that. I guess I turn to the county administrator. Joe?
Thanks, Mike. I have a very short report tonight. Just to remind you, the budget retreat is scheduled for the 29th, 5:30. I think it's a TCAT. We need to confirm that. But so we're on for the retreat on the 29th. For those of you who are interested in kind of making sure that we stay constrained, I will tell you this is our first budget action of 2015. We are buying smaller cups now, if you've noticed, in the dispenser. So we're beginning to take steps to keep things in line. But I did want to remind you of the retreat. It'll be an important night to talk about where we go for 2015. The other thing that I wanted to talk about again briefly, and I think I mentioned it at the last meeting, is the role that counties are expected to take under the tax freeze in terms of pulling together a report on consolidations, mergers, shared services, and other efficiency measures, that by pretty much this time next year, by June 15th of 2015, counties are due to submit a report to the state that describes what kinds of activities like that, shared services, we will be putting into place that will, over the following 3 years, save the equivalent of 1% of our levy in each of those next 3 years. And when I say our levy, it means the aggregate levies of all of the municipalities who are involved in these undertakings. It's not binding on any municipality to be a part of a countywide approach, but we are basically the default. So the county has a lead role in this. So this in itself is going to be a major undertaking. It's going to require a lot of time and attention to it. I think at the next TCOG meeting, we will be asking through Mike that municipalities within the county begin to inventory what the shared services are that are already in place. What have we already merged? What have we consolidated? Where are the savings? Where are the shared services? To develop a big book, as we did with the stimulus. So, again, Mike will be making that presentation to TCOG next week, and that'll be the starting point in that effort. I'll also be reaching out to Cornell to see if maybe there's a way that we can receive some assistance from them in this process. But again, over the next year, this is a pretty significant undertaking that we will be not asked, told to do under the new tax freeze proposal.
Joe, that be called a state mandate that's unfunded?
Well, I think so.
Thank you.
I think so. So that's it. Those are the two items on my list. And again, there'll be much more to follow on the countywide shared services report.
Martha has your hand up, then Peter.
A couple questions, Joe. So when you say, for example, the health insurance consortium saved the smaller municipalities much more than the county,
right.
We would, in a sense, get credit for saving. We sort of put all the budgets together and figure out if we saved 1% of the levy of all the budgets.
That's right. That's the way the methodology would work. So you're exactly right. You aggregate all of our levies. That's the denominator. The numerator is the savings that we achieved. So we would share that benefit. The question there is, how will the state look at things that are already in place and whether they will recognize that or not? And the rhetoric that came out in the beginning, yeah, we'll look way back. In the interviews that followed, yeah, maybe 6 months, maybe 12 months. Where we, I think, have to pin them down is how do they answer that question, and if there are ongoing savings. So through the consortium, we didn't save $1 million once. We save $1 million every year that's in place. How will they recognize and account for that ongoing savings?
But they probably won't account for it at all because we didn't just do it this year or next year. We're not proposing to do it next year. So why don't we undo the consortium? Let's abolish it, and we could probably start up again pretty quickly. You think?
I think
we should do that. The other is, why don't we? I wonder what it would cost and save if Pennsylvania and New York consolidated, and what the shared services benefits could be if the states of New York and Pennsylvania did things together. Probably some savings there, you think? Maybe one governor. We have just one governor instead of two.
All right. Moving right along. Peter?
Joe, I'm having a hard time understanding this arithmetic. So per year, I mean, every savings you make in the end gives you an infinite amount of money because you're not going to go back from it, okay? So the... You say over 3 years, but I don't quite know what that means. It means that if you can do it the first year, that's enough, because that means you'll do it every year after that. Is that right? So what you're saying is that you have to save 1% of the total tax levy, period, right?
Yeah, although just to parse that out a little bit, if we achieved a one-time reduction equivalent to 1% of our levy, so you achieved it in the first year and it was a one-time benefit and it didn't recur, you would only save that 1% one time. So if NYSEC is trying to help pin this down too, but if we would save the 1% and sustain that 1% over a three-year period, that's the target.
Yeah, I understand, but that just never happens because all of our expenses are ongoing, so to speak. So, you know, if we get together with some other municipality and share a truck, you figure that's forever, right?
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's all. And so everybody gets credit for everybody else's sharing. Is that right? So what we're going to do is take the total expense of all governments in Tompkins County and say that the total of that has to be 1%. We have to say 1% of that.
Levy, of the combined levies.
Of the combined levy, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Carol Chalk.
Yeah, to Martha's list, I would direct you to price out what it would cost for every one of our towns and villages to institute their own assessment offices, the rent, the staff, training, all that we do, because we really are one of two counties in the entire state and the only one to have achieved truly full county assessment. And we did it a long time ago. So if we get to add up the years, that should do it right there. I did notice that just this afternoon we got invited. I can't go, but we did get invited to a joint NYSAC School Boards, Conference of Mayors and Association of Towns Summit in Syracuse on April 25th. Grace Under Pressure, Innovation in a Time of Forced Efficiencies, an all-day summit with people from each of those organizations coming and talking about. So I don't know if any of them might have heard the inside scoop on what one can count or not, or might be able to help do the lobbying as they continue to figure out what we can count.
Right, and I will be going to that, and if anybody else would like to go, there's at least one car heading to Syracuse for that event, and you're welcome to go with me for that. And you talked about the things that we've done in the past. Again, some of them are huge. TC3, I mean, how much have the two counties saved by doing TC3 and TCAT and many others? So,
Before you assemble the big book mm-hmm. and decide to hand it all in at once, we should figure out, do we do better handing it in all at once or apportioning it over the next 3, 4, 5 years if we're going to need to do that, justify every year a different thing that we've done?
It seems that TCAG is the right place to talk about how that gets rolled out. Martha?
Yeah, just to clarify, so I think you said all the government, the denominator is the combined levies of the governments that share. So if we have the health insurance consortium, it's those governments. It's not the school districts.
Correct. It's only local governments, correct?
Yeah. If we had something that involved the school districts, their budgets would be included.
I don't know how they would work. School districts are in a different bucket. So the governor's focus is only, in this case, on local governments. And, again, it's to qualify homeowners for that rebate check in the second year.
Right, but the school districts are under the same kind of plan, which is actually interesting because the real savings could come from breaking down some of the silos between school funding and other funding. So, for example, if school transportation and public transportation could coordinate, there might be some actual savings. But my understanding from years ago looking into like a kid's gadabout, those never, you don't let your peas and your carrots touch. I mean, you don't, that the school, Department of Education requirements about transportation are so different than public transportation requirements, it's impossible to coordinate. So I don't know if that gives some thing to talk about. I don't know.
Brian?
Yeah, as long as we're talking about it. I can foresee where some consolidations would actually cost money to start with. And being that this sounds like a pretty clear three-year window for this, let's call it a project for consolidation, but sometimes true consolidation of services costs money up front, and you realize the savings later on. And I wonder if that sort of thinking would play into. Yeah, I mean, you'd almost have to do a run out the costs for, could be 10 years, And after 10 years, there could be significant savings, but not within the window that they're talking about.
Agreed. I mean, that's one of the limitations. You have 3 years. That's where their blinders are. Over the three-year period after you submit the report, you have to demonstrate that you will save 1% of the aggregate levy. What happens down the road, they don't talk about.
Right. So I mean, you can do some of the obvious things, the purchasing, the stuff that everybody needs, but it would seem to me they're trying to drive home actual services and organizations and, melding of organizations, and it takes time. It may very well take some money, and you may realize those savings well down the road, you know, especially when you're talking about labor agreements and, you know, so on and so forth. But it's just something that you've got me thinking about here. So.
Peter Stein.
I got another question. People put the words consolidation, shared services together. It's like hyphens, okay? They're just other words for the same thing. But as a matter of fact, they're not at all other words for the same thing. And the idea, consolidation means like the town and the city of Ithaca consolidating. And that don't happen in 6 months, okay? That requires public referendums in both places. And so I don't know what they're talking about with the consolidation. I understand better about the shared services. But the other sounds just like words on a piece of paper. I mean, no one could conceivably imagine a consolidation of, what, two counties or what, happening within a year or six months from now.
Or 3 years.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, thank you. Joe, did you have something else?
You want me to talk about the assessment?
Yeah, I wondered if you might pick up that. Folks, in your red folders, there is a resolution not on the agenda and a memo from the assessment department, and Joe's going to speak about that.
Yeah, Jay Franklin was made aware of basically a special act of the state legislature that affects that could affect any government within the state that wants to adopt this. And I'm going to try to explain it quickly. Let me get to the bottom line first. In looking at this piece of legislation, it was the belief of staff that this really doesn't fit for us. This is really something that applies to some very hard-hit areas that suffered damages during the storm last summer. And when we looked at how this piece of legislation might affect us, we found it has virtually no effect on us. Here's what it is. The state, to its credit, has said that because of the severe weather event that happened late last summer, there were some parts of the state that were very hard hit by it. There was a lot of property tax or property damage that occurred, particularly in the Mohawk Valley area. And to be able to capture the damage that occurred to property and the effect of that damage on property values, the state said we will wiggle around taxable status date a bit to allow us to capture that damage in the next tax cycle's valuations. And that's a good thing. But we are included in the region that the state said you can make this change if you'd like to. Now, when we looked at how our property owners were affected by that storm, and there's only one storm that's covered by this piece of legislation, we found that it appears there was only maybe one property that sustained the kind of damage that might warrant a change in assessment that would be allowed under this piece of legislation. And if that were to happen, there might be an adjustment of $85 in the homeowner's tax bill. So in looking at this legislation, again, staff found that it really doesn't work for us, that the good news is that precedent has been set by the state now, both in Sandy, Irene, and this storm, of doing this when the need exists. That's great that the precedent exists. But we didn't feel that we need to adopt this legislation here. At the same time, we wanted to make sure that we brought it to your attention so that if you have a different opinion, if you think we ought to be opting into this, that we have an opportunity to do that. Now, our time constraint is that to be able to incorporate this legislation, we have to get it to a public hearing by your next meeting. So if you want us to go forward, we would need to approve a resolution tonight to schedule the public hearing for your next meeting. And I assume at the same meeting we would approve the resolution that we would need to implement this. So we just want to make sure everybody had a chance to take a look at it. I'm not sure I gave you a good, concise, coherent explanation of what it is. There's a memo inside your packet that might do a better job. But again, it looks as if it would benefit one taxpayer and maybe an $85 adjustment.
And I specifically asked that we have paper on it tonight so that we had the choice of whether we wanted to do this or not. And I guess I would open it up if anyone wants to talk about it. Carol?
Would our normal process to be just to decide whether to put it on the agenda or not and then talk about it at that point, or you want us to talk about it now?
Well, because Joe was the one that was going to speak about it, I thought we could do it. I can put it. I would ask that we put it on the agenda, but if someone wanted to move it, I would think it would normally come out of the GO committee, but I think this is probably news to the chair of that committee as well, and we want to make sure that everyone knows this. When in the next thing after reports, I ask for resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda.
So can I just ask Joe then? So what would normally happen? I mean, to me, the principle is the same, regardless of the number of people involved. If this is something that the state you're entitled to, but how does the property assessment change if somebody's covered by insurance versus not?
It would still affect the value. So the assessor would look at the condition of the property at the time the valuation occurred. So they wouldn't take into account whether there'd been a reimbursement through insurance. They would only see if the property sustained damage that affected its value.
So if it sustained damage and then got fixed before our assessor happened to look at it, then the value would be?
That would be my understanding, yeah. Yeah.
And if it's assessed, if it's looked at this year and it has a reduced assessment and then it gets fixed by next year, then it gets raised again?
Presumably, yes, if that would affect its market value, sure.
Martha?
So if we move the taxable status date, we can't just move it for one parcel, right? We would move it for everybody.
Microphone, John.
No, my understanding is you would move it, but only for those properties that can take advantage of it. And in our case, there'd only be one property that could take advantage of it if they chose to do that. I don't know that it would even bother to do that for as little money as it would matter.
Okay, so the first question is it doesn't change everybody else's taxable status date.
Right, only those that qualify.
All right, have we talked to this property owner?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't know that Jay spoke with them or not.
I mean, if there's no downside to doing it, you know, $85 is, you know, I can think of ways to spend $85. So I wouldn't say, gee, that's not enough to make it worthwhile. If there's no downside to doing it.
It's up to you. I don't know the costs of, for example, advertising for the public hearing and conducting the public hearing. I don't know whether the costs of doing this exceed the benefit that we would provide. But that's why we wanted to bring this to you.
My only concern is that we may be aware of one property, but who knows? Maybe there are other ones out there.
Well, a couple things. In order to do it, you have to have a public hearing, which means you have to provide the notice, and you have to provide the notice that you passed the law. It's $50 for each one, so it would cost us $100 to save the $85.
Yeah, but it's $100 times divided by 100,000 residents and $85 to one property owner.
Well, you asked what would be the downside.
I hear you. Okay.
It cost us $100.
Okay.
That would be the downside.
Okay. Kathy Luz Herrera.
I'd like to move that we move not to move the date.
Okay. When we get down to that point, we'll see if anybody wants to move to add it to the agenda. If no one does that, then it won't get added. Would that be all right, Kathy?
That would sure be okay with me.
Thank you. Dooley Kiefer.
Just wanted to go on record as saying I don't think we should consider it at this time. We haven't even seen a copy of the law. It seems premature. If you want to set a public hearing, my colleagues want to do that, that's fine. I don't think I would vote for it no matter what happened at the public hearing at this point.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Wait, so
Nate?
I mean, so why can't we just take it up at GO? Is there
timing? So we need to move
timing
quickly to get our request in place. So there, the state has set a deadline on opting in. So we need to get the public hearing done on the 5th.
Sixth.
The first meeting.
So we have a year to talk about it at GO.
Just wouldn't be for this year.
You're bringing up a pretty important point. If I didn't make it earlier, I need to reinforce it. This is only for this one event.
Right.
So my concern was, if we opt out now, does that preclude us from being able to offer this benefit in the future?
Right.
It doesn't. So this relates to this specific event that occurred last summer.
Right.
If something else happens, if there's another weather event that affects us, it's very likely, given the precedent, the state will do the same thing. At that point, we can opt in then for that year.
Martha?
I guess that's the perfect purpose of a public hearing, is to find out if there are other people affected by this, and I would support that. And in the meantime, we can get a copy of the law.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we can think about it for just a few minutes. And let's move on now to a report. I'm sorry, Joe, were you complete?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Let's move on to a report from our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
Then let's move on to a report from our finance director, Rick Snyder.
I wanted to thank Joe for his report on the size of the cups and the cost savings.
I should add, I was wondering why Joe wanted to borrow my cup.
I brought my own.
And I have no cup. And as you'll see, there's a large cup, a smaller cup, and I have no cup. But it was explained to me earlier that because I'm a retirement tier 6 individual, I have a reduced benefit. And I believe that's true.
I think you get a tin cup. I think you get a tin cup, Rick.
I'd like you to turn to page 4 of your packets so I could relate to you tonight. Oh, thank you very much. I used to be in 4-H, too, so thank you. The sales tax distribution summary I'm sharing tonight is for February, and it shows that during that month that the county's portion was down 7.38%. If you'll look in the second section there, under the line mark county, under February, we're down 7.38% compared to last February. The year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total about $4.4 million compared to $4.8 million in 2013. That's the year-to-date, the 2 months together. This represents a decrease of 9.12%. According to the report, we should be at 16.7% of our budget, and for right now, we are currently at 13.3% of our sales tax budget. And that's all I have for tonight.
Rick, when do we get the March figures and the reconciliation for the quarter?
We just received the March proceeds today. We haven't allocated them yet or distributed them yet. So within the next few days, we should have the March figures. But more importantly, after that, within about a week after that, around the 20th of the month, we'll get the quarterly report from the state with the true-ups, which means the adjustments. And that's the best indicator that we can bring back to you the true quarter-to-date results after we get that report from the state. So I would imagine that from what I've heard of some of the numbers being released already, that in a lot of counties, all 3 months, the whole quarter is down compared to the previous year. And I would imagine that's going to be the case here also. But we'll know that within about, and I can bring that information to you in about a week.
Joe, Mariana?
Yeah, and if we find that these first couple of months are indicative of the quarter,
then we will have to think about what a response should be. Because at that point, if we see that we're down by this kind of a number after the reconciled first quarter, which is the one we need to focus on, then we will have to very quickly assess what that means for our 2014 budget and begin to do some remedial work to make sure that we stay in balance over the course of the year. If it's down this much as well at the end of the quarter, we also have to think about how this affects the 2015 budget that we're trying to put together right now, because you build on the prior year. So in the first month when we got this, we kind of put it aside and said, let's see how we're doing in February. February looks pretty rotten. So everything will key on the reconciled third quarter, and then we will be back to you if there's a problem to talk about what we need to do.
Brian, then Peter.
Thanks. We have a budget retreat coming up here in the next little bit. Is there going to be is that going to be able to happen prior to that?
Yes.
Okay. And let's not get overly nervous, because I don't think anybody left their house in January and February of this year if they didn't have to. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying. So they are going to be ready. That's good.
I would just point out, Brian, that we all spend a lot more money on fuel, though, and that's we do tax energy in Tompkins County. So, Peter Stein.
I'm just wondering. I don't follow these things, but I read the newspaper and I hear all the time that the economy is getting better slowly. Wish it would be getting better faster, but it's getting better. It's better this quarter than it was last quarter. This certainly sounds like that's not the case in our neck of the woods. Is that right, or is there something special about Ithaca, or is this the same trend that there's been all over the country?
Well, when you read about the consumer spending, usually those are national figures that they promote.
Right.
And so they may talk about a small uptick in consumer demand or consumer spending. It could be 0.2% or 0.5%. That does not normally translate into the area where you happen to live. Every area, every state, every county has its own economic factors. And I believe that a lot of those economic factors are brought out. There's a survey report that I know we get in our office from one of the local
Cornell people.
And so we do get economic data for this particular region quite often, and it is available. But sometimes the national figures that you hear on the nightly news don't translate to what's happening in our county. And then what I said earlier, how sales tax was down in January, February, and March for a lot of counties around us here in New York. That's why I would not be surprised if we are down for the first 3 months also.
But I've also heard that New York's economy is getting better. I read that in the papers.
And we've been preparing stuff for the retreat, just looking at the economic stats. And, you know, the indicators look pretty good. Unemployment keeps declining. Things look pretty good. Hopefully it's a seasonal thing. Hopefully the weather was so rotten nobody bought things. What drives sales tax, or at least a pretty good part of it, is the sale of durable goods, cars, refrigerators, big things like that. So I don't know how the weather may have affected those patterns of buying the big things. Again, hopefully it's weather-related. Hopefully when we get a reconciled check, things will pop up again. But I think now we need to start focusing on this and doing a little contingency planning.
I mean, one thing I remember hearing in my 4 years on this, sitting at this table, is that these numbers don't mean anything, because all has to do with reconciling and things that are happened 4 months ago or 4 years ago, and it doesn't really have any relationship, particularly strong relationship, to the economic environment that we're living in. Is that correct or not? You know, that sounds like a lot, what I'm hearing here.
I think what we've always said is let kind of hold off until you see a reconciled quarter, because then they do all the adjustments, and that's really, as Rick says, the trued-up number. That's the one we're going to want to pay attention to, and that one is it will be here shortly. So there's a lot of volatility within the quarter. By the end of the quarter, though, that's really indicative of real spending activity.
Okay.
That's when we need to either feel better or get worried.
And my last commentary on that is, I remember last year when I arrived here, we were behind in the sales tax figures up through halfway through the year and even beyond. And because of the cyclical nature of spending and sales tax, there are some months that are historically heavier months where you have higher proceeds and some months that are typically lower months. And so what happened last year, and it could again happen this year, is that although halfway through the year you may be looking like you're behind, by the time you reach the end of the calendar year, you catch up, because November and December can be some fairly, are usually traditionally your fairly big months. And that's what happened last year, is that we caught up and surpassed by hitting the budget mark, and we were A-OK last year. But we could be in that same kind of cycle.
Well, we could be in another, right? I mean, we're flying blind is what I what I'm hearing, really.
But as you get more months into the report, you know, it starts to make a little bit more sense. And that's why Joe was cautioning us, saying it was too early during the first 2 months to really send up a cautionary flag that we had to change our business plan. But if we see this in the next month reflecting the same kind of negativity, then we do have to change our mode of operations here and come up with a plan to cut the budget.
Martha Robertson.
Is, as far as we hear that the state's doing better, but there's a big difference downstate and upstate. Yeah. So I think there's a big gap. Downstate is really, you know, sort
but
of
But I've
booming.
Also heard that upstate is doing better. I've been hearing that, you know.
Jim Dennis.
I was not going to speak, but I've heard upstate is doing better also, but it was mostly by Andrew Cuomo who said that. And he has an ulterior motive in all of it. And I think Rick's explanation is as good as any I've heard. We make projections in sales tax, and it's based on history. It's based on the best economic information we can have, but it's not a definite number. We say it in the budget, and we hope that what we learned through 5 years it's going to hit that number. So when I hear there's unemployment has gone down, I also read that people have stopped looking for work and they're off the rolls. They're not even being counted anymore. So, I mean, it's a numbers game, folks. And I think what we've managed to do in 5 or 6 years is sort of stay ahead of the game, and sometimes it goes one way and sometimes it goes the other way. And I think you have it's a hold on all the time. And, you know, I don't think you can put your head in the oven today because you might be able to pull it out 2 months from now. But you have to think, you know, you have to look at the big picture over a 12-month period.
Okay, let's go on. Resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. And this would be the place that if someone wanted to move this resolution having to do with the Mohawk Valley and Niagara County Assessment Relief Act, they would move that. Martha has her hand up. You're moving to add that to the agenda?
I would do that.
Is there a second for that? Seconded by Jim. All in favor of adding that to the agenda, please raise your hand.
Well, wait, can discussion on that?
No,
is there any discussion?
I don't think we discuss those, whether to add them or not. When it comes to it, we will then have the discussion. How many? All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 to add it. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3. Who are we missing? 4?
It was 4.
Okay. Leslie's out.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to change my vote. I'll make that a 10.
All right. As long as we haven't announced the vote, I'd see whether we can.
Can I?
Let's re-vote so we don't get confused. All those in favor of adding that to the agenda, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All those opposed? 1, 2.
Three.
Three.
Four.
Peter was hiding.
Three.
All right, that gets added to the agenda. Nathan, when it comes to your report, would you please move that?
I have a question about it. Is there any, do we have any staff who could spend time finding out whether they're actually passed both the Senate and the Assembly? Because I'm finding a Senate bill, but no action on the Assembly number. So it would be good to know if it's even a valid act.
The budget passed. It was part of the budget.
Right, it was a part of the budget.
Part of the budget bill. The budget bill passed.
Wouldn't this, okay, we
so
can talk about
need,
it when
there would need to be a separate
bill. All right, let's move to the consent agenda. We have one advisory board appointment. That is Brian Robison to the Public Safety Committee, representative for the Traffic Safety Committee. And then we have resolutions. If you want them off the agenda, please say so. Resolution A, ID 4766, Award of Spring 2014 New Tourism Initiative Grants. Resolution B, ID 4765, Award of Spring 2014 Tourism Project Grants. Resolution C, ID 4764, Award of Spring 2014 Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grants. Resolution D, ID 4763, Award of Spring 2014 Community Celebration Grants. Resolution E, ID 4762, Award of 2014 Grants for Arts and Cultural Organizational Development, Community Arts Partnership. Those are all out of the Economic Development Committee. Then we go to the Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution F, ID 4773, Budget Adjustment in order to accept grant for the Medicare Improvements for Patients and Providers Act, Adult and Disability Resource Center Funding, Office for the Aging. Resolution G, ID 4769, authorizing social services to accept private grant and enter into contracts on behalf of Family Treatment Court for a multi-year prevention and family program. Resolution H, ID 4758, Budget Adjustment, Social Services Department, SNAP SNAP Education Grant. Resolution J, ID 4756, Budget Adjustment, Purchase of Computers and Software, Mental Health Department. Resolution J, Budget Adjustment, New York State Office. J is off. And I think that's all of them. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Kathy Luz Herrera, seconded by Carol Chalk. Discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Let's move to our standing committees. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Kathy Luz Herrera is the chair.
I'm not going to apologize for this. I'm going to say those four words that everybody loves to hear. I have no report. Our next meeting is April 21st, next week.
We'll move to the Economic Development Committee. Will Burbank, chair.
Well, thank you. I will have a brief report. We did meet on April 7th, and we spent a lot of time talking about the tourism grants, and I thank you very much for passing them on consent. We also heard a brief report on a study that TCAD is doing on the economic impact of repowering the Cayuga Station. They've hired a company called the Des Moines Consulting Group, and that report, it was due out last week, though I have not seen it on their website, so I will try to see if that has happened. There were concerns raised in the committee that the report could have been broader in terms of its perspective. It basically considered just the opposite, the economic impact of repowering using gas versus not repowering. And as we all know, there are many other possibilities that have been raised. We heard a presentation from Martha Armstrong talking about the economic development strategy that she is at work doing. This is the third version of this document, and it basically is their strategy and by extension our strategy for keeping our local economy strong. We did an exercise where we were invited to share values and goals, and we hope to have a finished draft document by the end of this year. And finally, we heard a really, really interesting presentation from Sue Dale Hall from the Child Development Council, talking about the impact and importance of child care as a sort of a key ingredient for a strong economy. And, you know, the council has been going since 1967. She says currently there are about 100 different entities, local businesses and nonprofits that are providing child care in our community. What we have found last time we did the census is there seems to be a disconnect between the number of families and with children needing child care and the available slots. It showed, for example, that there were 4,300 preschool children and 69% of those children had both parents working. So in theory, they need somebody to care for the children. And that would mean there would be approximately 3,000 child care with only, but only about 1,600 spaces were available. And the situation was even worse for infant child care. What do we do about that? She wasn't exactly clear. It's not clear that you can identify need and get in motion new child care facilities. By the time you do, frequently the need has changed. But there are sort of some ideas that she felt were worth our consideration. I had not been aware that one of the benefits that Cornell gives to many of its employees is a voucher for use of child care. And she says that she suggested this is something that we could encourage other employers to do. Perhaps somebody in the committee suggested that maybe as we're considering abatements or whatever our package is, that this would be something that really, really makes for a very strong and vibrant working place and should be part of that benefit package if it can be done. There are state and federal dollars support that we should be monitoring and trying to see if we are getting our fair share. She encourages us to continue thinking of child care as a key part of economic development. Anyway, that was what happened this month. We will be meeting next month on Monday, May 5th. At 3:30 in the old jail, and I would invite all of you to come over and hear a presentation. We're going to be having Kirby Edmonds come and talking about what a just and a truly just local economy would look like. And we will also be hearing from Ken Schlather talking about all the economic development efforts of Cornell Cooperative Extension, Tompkins County. And that concludes my report, unless there are questions.
Questions for Will. Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Mike.
Nathan Shinagawa, Chair, Government Operations Committee.
Yes, the Government Operations Committee has not met yet this week. We will be meeting towards the end of the month. And at that meeting, Joe, I believe you're going to be presenting some more formal recommendations on how to move forward with our living wage analysis that was done at the last meeting, right? And we'll continue some of the work that we did at our previous meeting. I do have a resolution that was just added to the agenda, and I would like to move it. It's authorization to hold a public hearing, Local Law Number B of 2014, enacting the Mohawk Valley and Niagara County Assessment Relief Act, and I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson. Discussion. Are we ready to go ahead, Martha?
Yeah, right. Well, the issue about being in the budget, or what, I mean, I think it's here for us to enact that. I think it's ready for prime time. I urge people to vote for it. This is just a public hearing. It doesn't mean we have to accept the change in assessments.
Carol? Brian?
Yeah, thanks. If this is even viewed as nothing more than an exercise, I think it's probably a good one. you know, who's to say that the next time this happens, it's not a major event, and we will at least have gone through it and should make that much easier to do the next time. I know there's only one, as we know of right now, there's only one property that's affected, but we also know that there's a possibility of many, many properties being affected in the future. So for that reason, I would support the public hearing and probably support action locally.
Would I say, Carol?
Yeah, sorry. I had gone quickly while still trying to listen to the sales tax report to look and see what the bill itself was, and discovered that the Senate had actually acted on and passed their version and the Assembly hadn't. But I didn't understand that it had actually then become part of the budget, the larger budget omnibus bill. And so the issue I started to raise is a non-issue. I do think that it's very scary that we are going to see more and more of this kind of thing. And so far, these are the kinds of actions that we're seeing the state take. We're going to play catch-up after every storm. We're going to ask fossil fuel companies to build thicker pipes so that their wires aren't damaged as readily, or build higher walls on the coasts. But we're not figuring out, and we're theoretically saying that we want to rein in the emissions that are causing the climate events that are going to cost us this kind of money more and more over time. So, I mean, yes, I do think we have to do something to provide relief for our residents, but I think if that's all we do, if this is going to be the action, the only action that we take, we're in very big trouble if we as a government are going to guarantee everybody's losses as the climate just keeps getting worse. So please, before the end of the week, or before the 30th, write to New York State and weigh in that there's got to be more that we do. But I do think that we do. We are by default the sort of the backstop for everybody else's insurance plans. And I guess we have to do it this time. I would like us, as the years go by, to figure out another more permanent way to deal with all of this.
Kathy?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to support this at this time. I think it's great that there's a possibility to do it, whether you consider it a unfunded mandate or not. But at this point, I think, well, we're beyond the point of spending more money on it than it's saving the particular taxpayer involved. I agree with what some have said, that it's important to know that we can do this, but no.
Julie Kiefer?
I just would like to have my earlier remarks reflected in the minutes about why I'm not voting for this. I look forward to discussing it at GO in the future. I think this is the wrong time to act.
Jim Dennis?
I will support this. Someone mentioned the number $85 at the beginning of this, and that would mean $6.07 from each one of you. So
I'll put myself in and simply say I will support this. Having been in a village that was flooded one time, I know that it could affect assessments. Mike Sigler?
I mean, I plan to vote for this, but I guess I'm a little confused because, I mean, I had a massive fire, and the assessment department came in and they lowered my assessment for the year, and we rebuilt because the house isn't worth that. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if you can't live in the house, it's not a house. I mean, and it sounds like the people who are voting against this are kind of like, you know, you're out of luck. So, I don't know.
This
seems like a non-issue.
Anybody who hasn't spoken, and before I go back for a second bite, sir? All right. Dooley, then Kathy.
Something that's relevant to consider. flood insurance prices are going up, and it's politically unpopular, so that the proposals to okay higher rates are getting a lot of pushback from residents' representatives. It's unreasonable to think that flood insurance rates should not go up because of the change in the weather, which is totally predictable now, and the fact that an awful lot of construction took place without thinking about that problem of certain locations. So although I am not hard-hearted toward people who have actually suffered losses, I don't think that it's our job as representing all residents to ignore the change in the climate and the way we've got to approach things in a different way. Carol spoke very well to a portion of that.
Kathy?
Thank you. I'll just start out by saying I couldn't get married for the longest time. I couldn't join the Army. These were because of federal regulations that actually discriminated against me. I've paid school taxes my whole life. I've paid more than my share my whole life, and I don't mind that because I want a good life. And if anybody thinks I'm hard-hearted, well, you haven't really examined my voting record. The fact is, to my way of thinking, this is coming to us at the last minute. Many of us have never seen the legislation, I among them. And for myself, this is just an example of everybody jumping on, kind of a knee-jerk, feel-good kind of thing. And I would be happy to pay the $670 for everyone that voted yes if I thought that this was going to solve a problem for us in this county right now. Next year, I'm happy to do it. We're wasting a lot of time talking about it, but the fact is, I just think that it's not appropriate for us to carry on like this, and that this is kind of a habit with us. So I'm voting no.
Martha, and let's go to a vote after that.
If we have a public hearing, does the timing require that we pass it next meeting too, or the meeting after?
No. Yes, it would have to be passed at the next meeting.
That's what I mean. All right. Well, you know, we've done that with more complicated things. I think this is a good faith effort to tell the public that this is out there and ask for their opinions. And that's all. You know, let's wait and see what we get.
Move to a vote on the resolution K, authorization to hold a public hearing, local law B of 2014, enacting the Mohawk Valley and Niagara County Assessment Relief Act. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Those opposed? 3. That passes, so that we'll hold schedule the public hearing on that.
And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Nathan. Go to Carol Chock for the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee.
PEAC will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, April 16th, at 3:30 p.m. for this month in the old jail. Committee members should bring calendars for our endless quest for the perfect meeting time. We will be hearing some very interesting reports. John Nagley from the Soil and Water Conservation District will give us an update. We'll meet the new director, I believe, or at least hear an update from Solar Tompkins. We will hear something, an introduction to the proposed priority trails strategy on behalf of the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, and Tom Knipe will be presenting that. And then committee members should see that there's an updated, edited version. We'll hear something and talk about endorsing the Tompkins County Sustainability Strategy. And I don't know if in the sustainability strategy people are asked to all bring their own reusable cups in, but if not, maybe that could be added to one of the actions. Might want to wash that. It's mine. I keep in my desk. It's actually very interesting that the county has had a sustainability strategy for quite a while that had 7 elements, and so we've now added apparently they're proposing to add an eighth, which has to do with social equity in addition to transportation, leading by example, facilities and grounds, purchasing, sustainable materials management, protection of county lands, employee engagement. So it should be an interesting discussion on that. So I encourage you all to come.
Thanks. Questions for Carol? Thanks, Carol. Charter review. We did have a meeting that was abbreviated, but we began to talk about some more of the charter. We will have our next meeting on May 7th at 3:30. Can I answer any questions? Old Library Committee also met, and I'd like to particularly thank Ed Marks for laying out a strategy to how we're going to attack these requests for expressions of interest. We continue to have a lot of pressure from some folks in the public who would really like to have us give out more information, and we will soon be making public as much of the six REIFs as is possible. There will be redacted some information having to do with proprietary information, financial, et cetera, for the proposers. But they should be up on the website fairly soon. Is that right, Joe?
Yeah, I think early next week it will be available on the website.
Thank you. Any questions? Brian, then Carol?
Well, let Carol go.
Carol?
Oh, well, I'd just like to know if you know whether that's going to go into executive session, and if so, what the time frame, if the public is interested in coming to portions of that meeting, do they want to come towards the beginning, the end, or not come? Is it not?
Well, if they want to speak, they should come at the beginning, of course, for privilege of the floor of the committee meeting. But we probably will go into executive session if we're going to discuss the full parts of those proposals that may have been redacted, for example. Brian?
I was just going to say, if the composition of that committee needs to change for one reason or another, that I would be willing to sit on that committee.
Okay, we have some volunteers. I appreciate that. Okay. We said at the last meeting that Carol's going to step off. I think the group felt that was the best. That Carol will, that we may, I hadn't completely decided, but I probably will appoint another fifth member. And I also said that if it became to a point where Carol could come back on, that we would add her back in as a sixth member at that point. Kathy?
Thank you. Just to let everybody know, I put my name in. This is adjacent to my district, and it's a building that many people in downtown Ithaca have a lot of interest in and concern about. So I'd like to have the opportunity to serve on the committee.
Okay. Any other volunteers? So we have lots to pick. Peter's volunteering as well. Okay. We have some choices here. Thank you all for that. Let's move on to Jim Dennis, Chair of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
The first item is the 29th of March at 5:30 is the budget.
April.
Sorry. I love March so much.
It looks like March.
April. 29th, 5:30 at TCAT. You all know where that is. We will make an effort as we collect money from each other to have something to eat if you would like. If I had my agenda for the budget committee with me, I would tell you what we were going to do, but I don't have it, so I won't tell you that. So it'll be, the next meeting is the 28th of April at 4 o'clock, right, Kathy? Yeah, 4.
Questions? Thanks, Jim. Brian Robison, Public Safety Committee Chair.
Thanks, Mike. The Public Safety Committee met yesterday. Another spirited meeting, which is good. It's a good thing. Before I get going on that meeting, I know you had someone from the dispatch center here at the last meeting, I believe. Was it Goosen? Was he here? Okay. For National Public Safety Telecommunications Week, which is actually this week. And from an email that I got earlier this week, they are accepting gifts, food, anything that anybody would like to share as a recognition of this week for them. But as far as yesterday's meeting, let me start at the end first. We did get an update from Susie Cook regarding the ATI study task force. They are presently doing an inventory of all the current programs. It's as if to say you don't really know where you're going unless you know where you're at. A very good idea. They're conducting a study relative to bails that are received from the jail, relative to criminal charges, and then relative to bed nights. And I'm assuming you all got an email from administration today. Takes a lot of study, and I'm sure we'll see that stuff again, but it's pretty interesting stuff, and it begins to answer a lot of questions. At their last meeting, according to Susie, they did have some staff there. I know there was Jeremy Van from the sheriff's office was there, and maybe others. I was not. But they're also beginning to demystify some things, some perceptions, if you will, that are out there regarding things like, well, the jail is full of people with, you know, small quantities of marijuana, let's say, for example, which is not true. You know, I could have told you before that that's not true because it's a non-custodial charge. But rather than hear it from somebody like us, it's good to hear from somebody in the field. So they're doing that kind of work. Also, criminal charges, normal bails, instances where you cannot even get bail, that sort of stuff. That stuff is in the progress or process of coming to where hopefully we can all have a presentation here. Some of it's going to be refresher, and a lot of it's going to be some really good information that people really should know. So, I mean, we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on it right now. Susie characterizes the committee as everybody is very much engaged. Everybody's doing good work. They're working hard. They have not set their next meeting, and they haven't set, if you recall, one of the things they were going to do is have a public meeting, an evening public forum type thing, and they're so busy figuring out where they are presently that they just haven't caught up to that, but that is coming as well. We also talked about the jail and the project or the proposed project at the jail. If you can imagine that. It was well over an hour that we spoke about it. Mark Kukufka was here again. He presented some updated renderings of the outdoor, I don't want to call it a building, but the outdoor structure, recreation structure. A lot of discussion on that, a lot of ideas, further ideas on moving it, so on and so forth, to the point where I finally asked, and I guess we are doing, we're going to have a special public safety meeting, and you might want to write this down, on May 5th, it's Monday, at 5:45 p.m. It will. The meeting will begin at the Public Safety Committee or Public Safety Building up on Warren Road. It will also include a tour for everyone that's there. It's hard to talk about structures and stuff in the abstract without actually being there. So if you have any questions as it relates to this that proposed structure, or for that matter any other questions related to the entire project, I would encourage you to come. We all received an email from Will and Dan and Dooley yesterday with a series of questions, and I know there's more. Those particular questions, staff at the Sheriff's Department has agreed to try to answer those in writing prior to this meeting, but there will probably be some follow-up that can be taken care of, hopefully, at this special meeting. And it's really hard, especially when you have a complicated project like this, not to mention that it's a very passionate issue, to deal with it once a month, especially in amongst a regular meeting. So we thought this might be the best way to tackle this and get everyone's, whether you're leaning towards favorably for the project, and especially if you're not at this point, please come so that some of these questions can be answered. The only thing we ask is that, like I said, if you have additional questions other than what was published yesterday, if you could get those to Michelle, who will then get those to the Sheriff's Department staff, and we'll try to answer as much as we can in writing, as I said. And also, if you think you're going to be there, please let Michelle know. The sheriff has asked for an approximate head count because there's some logistics that are going to be involved with a tour through the jail, as you might imagine, and things like that. So, Joe.
If I could just respond to one thing that you said, Brian. You indicated that administration sent something out by email today. I saw some people looking to see if they've got an email.
Oh.
We have circulated internally a draft statistical report to vet it to make sure that it's right and everything. So we have not circulated that to the full legislature yet, but will soon. I think by next week we'll be doing that.
Okay, we have questions.
That would be a whoops.
I have Will, then Jim, then Peter. Will?
Okay. Brian, thank you for that report, and thank you very much for setting up that meeting. I hope that many people will take advantage of it. I think it really brings it alive when you actually see the space and you have a better sense of what's happening. I wanted to also just add a little bit to your report on the task force. I actually have gone to the first three of those meetings, as has Joe, dutifully taking notes. I have been very impressed by the group that's come together. They're taking their job incredibly seriously. There's a variety of perspectives. They're very, very good questions. What they were doing at this most recent meeting was, with the help of Officer Van, just trying to consider, okay, what happens when somebody has been arrested? What are the options in terms of, go to jail, have an appearance ticket? And it's a very complicated series of steps. And we don't always have the freedom not to send somebody to jail. Sometimes it's literally just built into the system, at the state level. But it's a very good working group, and I'm very hopeful that they will come up with some good questions and ideas. I am also hope one of the disappointments going to these meetings is that I have not seen any of the folks who were appearing at our meeting, pleading with us to get people out of our jail. I would hope that some of them would be inspired to come, especially when they have the public information or public chance for public comments, which has yet to have been said. But I would hope that there are some good ideas that will come from the community, because it's a very complex problem, and we need all the help we can get.
Jim Dennis?
Brian, a timing thing. The May 5th meeting, as a result of that meeting, did you expect that you would have a vote on something at the end of that day?
No, not a vote. I would hope that
or a recommendation.
A consensus would be nice. No, it wouldn't be the bond resolution vote or anything. No.
Okay. So the second part of the question is the regular Public Safety Committee meeting in May potentially could be a bond resolution recommendation.
I suppose anything's possible, although I would almost, well, I guess I don't want to say, but let's say, for instance, that as a result of that meeting, again, a lot of it is kind of now being centered around, and it's interesting, actually, that there is not a lot of discussion or debate on adding seven beds to the jail. I think by and large people see the value of that. It's the discussion's more been around the design and location of the outer building, which is fine, and I really hope that day when we go out there and look at it, that we have a normal day. You know, the prevailing winds from the west. I'm really hoping that the sun rises in the east that day, just so we can see environmentally what goes on. And to answer your question, Jim, if it is decided that the design of that or the location of that structure is different than it is today, I would imagine that the that Labella would need to then go back and rework some figures as to what the consensus is as far as the building, and be able to update those figures before we can bring a bond resolution. And Joe, you can pipe in on that.
Yeah, as I think about it, Brian, I mean, my mind was aiming toward an approval of the bond resolution by the full legislature on May 20th at your second meeting.
Mm-hmm.
If the plan changes, and it's a significant plan, like pivoting, moving it back, and so forth, you make a good point that it may take Labella a little while longer to do the final designs. Now, I think they have assembled so much information about this that it's not as if they're going to design it anew. But we'll have to find out from them how much more time will they need to do things like the drainage plan and all that, mm-hmm. if it turns.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd like to hold on to that May 20th mm-hmm. date, but it may be that we have to back that up. It could be as short as a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I would just say if it's possible, we can stay on schedule, hopefully, but that may not be possible.
All right. I have next Peter Stein, then Martha Robertson, then Carol Chalk, and Jim Dennis would like to speak again.
no boy. I was just going to ask a question that has sort of been answered, namely, what was the original deadline for doing this, and what is it now? How far have we fallen behind?
I think it was November.
Well, we were going to come back. So we got the authority to do the design back in, I think it was October or November. We were going to come back in the early spring, let's say March, with a bond resolution. We deferred that, and we're now looking. We had looked at May 20th as the new goal for the resolution.
So you think we can hold that?
I wouldn't want to give up on it yet. I mean, if there is a consensus, after looking at the new design, and call it the old design, even though it's pretty new too, if there's a consensus that you want to move to a new design, That's going to take a little bit more time. If you decide after looking at the two options that will be left, the old design is the better one, then I think we can move pretty quickly toward the approval of the bond.
Yeah, I'm sort of mystified by this. I've watched a lot of building designs, and by God, this is certainly not one of the more complex designs that I've seen. You talk about the redoing of the Carpet Bazaar and turning it into COFA, or redoing this building and so forth. This one looks like, I could do it myself, sketch it out. Here's the roof and so forth. But sooner or later, you have to come to a conclusion about all of these things. And I would think there's a pretty simple design we're talking about. And, what I think all the time is every month we don't do it, we lose money. It's costing us money. It's the board out money that we're... The reason we're doing it is essentially is to get that. And every month we delay, there's money that we've lost. And money's tight these years. So.
And you bring up a good point, Peter, in that... Because I had suggested as kind of a compromise yesterday to separate the two issues, the inside project, the outside project. But in reality, the outside project has to be done first in order to be able to get in there and do the inside. So that is the delay. And you're right. You're right. Every month that goes by, we're still boarding out those seven people.
So I would hope we could come to a conclusion one way or the other relatively quickly. That's...
Martha.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take that much. I think we've kind of agreed that maybe one more meeting of talking about kind of design issue would work, especially if people get all their questions in and staff has a chance to go through them, et cetera. The regular public safety meeting then is the following Monday, right? The 12th. So
yes.
That'll go forward. Now, so I would remind folks that when we issue a bond, it's not for the budget amount of the project. We could get a general cost from Labella that says, okay, it's still in the same ballpark, so the bond resolution goes forward as we had it. Or, well, it looks like that's going to cost a little bit more, so we give ourselves an extra, $50,000, whatever, to cover costs. I don't think we have to wait for final, project documents to go ahead and bond. So I think it's absolutely worth taking a little bit of extra time to do it right. There were some fundamental questions that were asked of the design, and, we're not going to drag it out, but I think it's time that it's going to produce a better project. Or at any rate, if it's the same project, satisfy some people. On the task force investigation that's going on, I don't want to in any way diminish what Susie and the group is doing now, but I want to say it's been done before. People shouldn't think that, it's about time Tompkins County took inventory of its ATI programs. It's about time they figured out what's the flow from when somebody's arrested and where do they go. I was part of that probably 10 years ago. We did that, and that led to it was part of the evaluation of the ATI programs, a three-year evaluation of the ATI programs. And that information is not brand new information. It is absolutely timely to redo it, to reinvestigate, see how things are working, to sort of remind ourselves of what might be new since the last time we looked at this flow chart. But I don't want anybody in the public to think this is the first time we've thought of these questions. And I'm really glad that they're doing it and doing such a thorough job.
Carol.
Oh, I just Will mentioned whether the public's showing up at the CJATI meetings, and I just wanted my own memory refreshed about when those are or where I would find out when the next one is and whether we're making any attempt to tell people so they'd know.
It's my understanding it's
you know, you need to appreciate there's a lot of different people on there, many of whom aren't staff. So it's a lot of meeting wizard. It's a lot of herding cats, you know, that sort of stuff. But they are on the website, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which happens to be down at this moment.
Is it down?
On the website as a committee? As a committee? As a subcommittee?
Yes, yes. It's under the task force.
Task force.
Yeah. Task force. It's under the meeting portal.
Your meetings are on there.
But I just went to check it, and I couldn't get to it.
Could I ask that we get an email just letting us know when they're set?
No.
No?
No, you can't. No.
You can't ask that. I may not get it, but I can ask.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thanks.
Next, we have people want to speak a second time, Jim Dennis, and then Peter Stein.
Michael, I really didn't want to speak a second time. I wanted to continue the conversation with Brian about the timing. because I'm concerned that it not move into June, basically. You know, we would have to schedule a special budget meeting after they do the bond resolution. And the thing I think I want everyone to think about is every time the divine Mr. K shows up, he has the meter running. And, you know, it's nice for him to drive from Rochester to here. If we want to twist this and massage that, they don't care. And, you know, I care about that. And I think my colleague Peter Stein said this looks like a simple project. That's the worst thing you can possibly say, yeah, because obviously it's a lean-to, and we've had at least a dozen people tell us how to move it, what windows to open, what other things to close, and I said yesterday it was painful. I'm going to square that today. It still is. And, you know, we need to get this thing done one way or another. And,
Peter?
And stop having him...
There's a concern I have. You know, in some sense, this committee that we organized that is now working to look at the ATI programs, you know, I sort of believe Martha talked about we looked at them 10 years ago. We also looked at them, at least I looked at them 3 years ago and came to the conclusion that they were pretty good. I thought we supported them well. I was a little disappointed when the day reporting went down to half a day instead of a day. But in general, it looked to me like they were doing their jobs. Now, there's somehow, I don't know if the public thinks that there's a connection between what that study group is doing and the construction of the addition. Because... If we have to wait for what the report of that committee is doing, then we're not going to build this thing for another year. And I think we have to make that clear that we're going to go ahead and build this new outdoor thing one way or another soon before we've come to a general conclusion about should we entirely revamp our ATI programs or something like that. Because that thing we're not going to, that decision we're not going to make in a big hurry. So it's a concern I have.
Thank you, Peter. Brian, anything else?
Just one other thing, and it has a little bit to do, I guess, with ATIs in that one other piece of business that we did yesterday was we accepted a grant from that was given from the state to OAR. If anything, OAR is probably been recognized as being a bit understaffed and under pressure, and that grant funds another position within OAR.
Assigned counsel.
Assigned counsel. Sorry, Joe. Assigned counsel for 3 years.
Thank you, Brian. Leslin is under the weather tonight. Does anyone else have a report out of workforce diversity? Kathy Luz Herrera, thank you.
I think Leslin made a pretty thorough report last time. Our next meeting is April 23rd, 3:30 in the Hayman Conference Room.
Questions? And I agree, we had quite a report last time. Peter Stein, Health and Human Services Committee.
Yeah, I've got a resolution there that I pulled.
Resolution J.
Resolution J, and I'd like to make an amendment to it.
Well, you want to move it first, please?
Well, I'll move it. Well,
if you're going to amend it, we better have someone else move
right.
it. Kathy's moving it. Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Go ahead.
All right, so I want to make make an amendment to it. There's a place where in that in Resolution J it refers to where is it? Let me get it out here. Yeah, information technology is referred to as ID in IT in line 20, and I'd like to just amend that to say the Information Technology Services Department instead of the IT Department.
Would that be friendly to the mover and seconder? I think so. Okay. Anything else? Joe?
Well, I hate to say this, I think there may be another change that you need to make in that resolution.
Oh, no.
Better to do it now. It refers to the 2013 budget. So in the resolve, it says makes the following 2013 budget adjustment for the mental health clinic. I suspect that is intended to mean the 2014.
That must be 2014, yeah.
Peter, would you want to move that as a
Oh, yeah, I move that,
that
and hope
okay.
that's friendly.
Is that friendly? So, excuse me.
I'm sure that's correct.
Kathy, let's hear from Kathy Covert.
It may need to be 2013. Rick, do you... Is it changing the... Books for 2013?
I did not know about it. If it was for 2013, I would have presumed I would have been alerted to before now. I assumed it was for 2014.
Aren't we finished with 2013?
Not when it comes to these things.
Can we follow up tomorrow and then I'll just make the appropriate...
Would that be all right with the legislature that... when they assured which one it is, that they put the correct figure in there, correct date in there, I should say. Is that all right with everyone? Okay. To Kathy, that's duly noted, please. All right. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank
Could
you.
I just say, in the explanation, it helps put it better in perspective in terms of where the funding is coming from and going to. Thanks. Good catch.
Minutes of previous meeting.
Could I make my report?
Oh, you want to do that too?
Gosh, I thought so.
Yes, sir.
All night.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, I have a number of items that I'd like to discuss that came out of the last HHS meeting. The first of which is a really important issue that, frankly, I'd never heard of before. Dan Klein mentioned it at the last HHS meeting, and I now know a whole lot more about it than I did at that meeting. So I'd like to describe it. I'm not sure how many people are aware of this. But there's a serious problem with the way that Medicaid money is used to pay for people on Medicaid that have to be transported to medical appointments. And it turns out that Chemung County, probably 25 years ago, figured out this rather ingenious business plan whereby money could be given by the money could be given by Medicaid to a county, and the county could use that money to help pay for a transportation system, a bus system in the county, and the bus system would not only transport Medicaid patients, but would also be used for transportation inside the county for general purposes. And that system was adopted by 9 or 10 counties in our general vicinity where these small bus companies would be operating a transportation service in that county, partially financed by Medicaid money. And that enabled a number of these transportation bus companies to work. And it turns out that about a couple of years ago, the governor's Medicaid redesign team redesigned Medicaid in certain ways, but one way they redesigned it was to keep that from happening, was to say that Medicaid money could not be involved in helping to fund a transportation system for the county. And what that has done, and that didn't take place until relatively recently, but what happened about just a couple of months ago is that the administration, the Cuomo administration, established this thing called the MAS, Medical, I forget.
Answering service,
which did essentially, I'm simplifying it, but essentially did for practically all of New York State, assigned Medicaid patients to transportation systems to take them to their doctors, every place in the state. So there would be a one telephone number, and you call that telephone number in Syracuse, and they would say, okay, Medicaid patient in Chemung County, you got to get to your doctor. Well, what you're going to get a cab that will take you there. And what happened then is that a lot of counties that had versions of our Gadabout, the whole system was decimated because they would not send them to Gadabout, that they were all sending them more or less to taxicab providers, which is less efficient and more expensive than what we were doing in the past. And there are real problems there. And I heard at a meeting that I went to yesterday at the Health Planning Council that this MAS system in Syracuse essentially will not use anything like the Gadabout system, but will insist on doing it all by taxicabs, which sometimes call inordinate amounts of money because the taxicabs have to go from one county to another to get at a hospital. And apparently this is a real problem for transportation systems. So anyway, I think that's something it really isn't an HHS issue, but frankly, I'm not sure that there's another committee whose issue it is. But until we find that, I think we would like to get involved in trying to make some kind of an effort to rectify that problem. So I'm sorry for the length of time that takes, but it's a complicated issue.
It's an important issue.
What else?
Any questions on that? At this point, I had some hands. I've got Nathan, then Martha, then Will.
Just a comment that in addition to just these taxicabs, even in hospitals now, I mean, and I'm in charge of this at my hospital, we have to get for Medicaid patients like pre-approval. And so before we would say, okay, let's say a Medicaid patient needed to be delivered back to a nursing home or, you know, back to their home via an ambulance or a medical van. Right? Before we would just be able to do that because it was needed, or we could just call the counties and they would approve it and it was pretty quick. Now we have to also go through the same agencies and it takes a long time for them to approve it and if we don't approve it, we're completely on the hook for paying for that service. So it is it's a consolidation that's affecting more than just that one particular.
Go ahead, the other two.
Martha?
So does it ever happen that it takes long enough that the patient is in the hospital overnight?
No. It's just that you're on the phone. I mean, from a staffing perspective, you have to have somebody on the phone for 20 minutes waiting.
Okay.
You know, so it's expensive from a staffing perspective, but usually it just takes about that long.
I mean, I can understand from the point of view of having somebody, and we talked about this last time, I think, about if there's one bus that goes from Danby to the hospital, that means the person has to get on that bus at 8:30 in the morning and doesn't come back the same way till 5 o'clock. That's not very user-friendly for the patient. On the other hand, we do have gadabout, and it's it sounds, Peter, like, I don't know, the taxicab lobby has sort of made this change happen. I don't know. I mean, that seems something that's worth looking at. You have to think about where's the money going now and where did it come from. It's also an example of kind of the short-sighted moving money around for so you can get a headline. So you can say, look how much we saved in Medicaid. Yeah. I'm really glad you're looking into it.
Will?
Ditto, and I would only add that the Medical Answering Services LLC is a for-profit entity. It's a classic, I think, misappropriation of supposed great savings that can come from privatizing what was formerly a public service. And, you know, once again, Peter, I think I'm really glad the committee will be taking up. I look forward to learning more and seeing if there's anything that can be done. Currently, I mean, it started, I guess, in nine counties in the state. It was, as of January 2013, went to 24, and in spring of last year, it was extended to the Finger Lakes region. So it's being unleashed on New York State. Thank you, Governor Cuomo. You do it once again in the name of consolidation. We are eventually paying the price.
I would add a nugget of history, and that is quite a few years ago, we had quite a debate at the Board of Representatives over the high cost of cabs for a very few number of patients who were being transported to Rochester to the only methadone maintenance clinic available. And it was costing an awful lot of money, and so we have to be careful those things aren't repeated. I've got Martha, then Dooley.
This sounds like an issue for the Democratic Rural Conference coming up, where your counties, the rural counties that might be especially affected by this are getting together at the end of April, and you might know somebody involved in that?
I think I've heard of it before. I can't remember the name.
So I don't know if this is could be brought up there, but it'd be interesting to know if other people are in the same boat.
Julie?
I thought part of the rationale for doing this was so that the state would no longer have to pay per passenger or per mile reimbursement to bus systems, so that on the state level they save money, not just Medicaid.
Kathy?
I'm glad that Dooley said that, and I agree that it's good we're looking into it. I just can't help but think that we actually do have resources in this community that deal with transportation, and that's TCAT. And I think that Fernando de Aragon also knows a tremendous amount about this. We've got terrific resources here, and taking it to the Democratic Rural Committee is a great idea. I also think that, as you were saying about Governor Cuomo, there's another way that this erodes a standard of living for a number of people, because these were good CDL-required jobs, and they were good jobs that are being undercut by using for-profit taxi services. So I'm glad you're looking into it. I'm still, as I have mentioned privately and as a TCAT board member, I would still like to have input, because the transportation industry does have a good lobby themselves, and I think there's a way that we can utilize the resources we have here in this county to bring pressure to bear and come to a more reasonable, if not much more cost-effective solution than was proposed by Governor Cuomo and his folks.
Peter, you want to continue with your report?
Yeah, I just want to make one more comment about this. Where one might say this is not Tompkins County business, because Tompkins County is different than any of these other 10 counties, because we have a very strong regional bus service. And we the gadabout thing we have is a model, and it's much superior to the gadabouts that these other counties have. But one argument that we could make, and I think it's true, is that another thing we are is we're a regional employer. That is, we have 20% of the jobs in Tompkins County come to us from the outside. And that means that either they drag their cars in here or they can take buses. And so to us, it's important to have these bus services in the counties that surround us. So we have an interest in that.
I think you meant workers, not jobs.
Workers, yeah, right. Okay, so next, DSS. Patricia Carey was really excited by this grant that she got, that DSS that got from the Doris Duke Foundation, which I don't really fully understand, but it's a substantial grant of $250,000 for a two-year program where, and I'll do the best I can to explain this, where what they're looking at was there's a particular organization called the the Children and Family Futures Agency, which has worked quite hard at trying to somehow get parenting skills deeper into family court decision making. And what this grant does for us is to, for our DSS employees who work in family court, to have the benefit of understanding what this organization, this family treatment, the Children and Family Futures Agency in California, what they do, and to incorporate that into our procedures, and also to evaluate it to see that in fact it does give better outcomes than what we're doing at the moment. So that sounded pretty exciting to me. Another thing, DSS talked about their program integrity initiative. I find it hard to believe that this money is correct. But according to this is where what they do is at intake they look for errors or for fraud in Medicaid money, and that they have saved more than $2.5 million in 2013 in fraud. I mean, that's a very impressive number. The mental health department, this is sort of an odd little story, but I don't know if you read in the newspaper that Microsoft has stopped supporting XP, the XP system. And as a result of that, they have to buy 40 new computers because those computers do not support the up-to-date operating systems, and that just has to be done. So the result of that was to spend a lot of money, and they're going to spend it. Another thing that she talked about, that Suru Manchuk talked about, is redesigning the entry to the mental health building. And I personally think that's something we could do. You go into that building, and you face an elevator, and there isn't a whole lot of instruction as to what floor you go to and where people are. And they're looking to see if there's something we can do to have some kind of a receptionist is doing something else on the ground floor to better integrate that. And a lot of the floors have got are private there with patients there. And to have simply an open elevator where people go in and get off at any floor they want to seems not to be correct. So they're going to work on that. And the last thing I want to report is Frank Krupa from the Health Department is looking into e-cigarettes. You know what e-cigarettes, I guess everybody knows what that is safe cigarettes, in that they don't have any tars. All they do is hook you on tobacco. And they're unregulated at the moment. And so Frank Krupa is looking at making a county regulation where we include e-cigarettes into the things that are forbidden in the various parts of the county where we have chosen to forbid the smoking of tobacco. This is not obvious, okay, because there's a counterargument, which is, well, the e-cigarette isn't really dangerous, that smoking it does not subject you to the lung cancer and heart disease problem that tobacco does because it doesn't have the tars. But on the other hand, it addicts people to that. And They now make things, the e-cigarettes, they make things with nice flavors in them, e-cigarettes that are chocolate as well as nicotine. So we're looking into that. And that concludes my report. Our next meeting will be May 13th.
Thank you, Peter. I don't think there's anything safe about e-cigarettes, in my opinion. Then can we move ahead to the minutes of the previous meeting, April 1st, 2014? Brian has moved them. Nathan has seconded them. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. Motion to adjourn? Brian? Martha? Seconds? All those in favor of adjourning?
You're here.
Those opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you all.